Good day, and welcome to episode 8 of MuseTech.net. And this is a continuation from episode 7. This is part 2 in our series about microphones and live miking for events like a jazz band concert, or even we could talk a little bit about a concert band concert in this podcast. But when we last left off, we were talking about guitars and basses, and we were talking about the direct in boxes. Maybe people don't know what this direct in is. Sometimes used to be early on they called it direct injection.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what is a direct in box or a DI box?
A DI box is essentially a transformer. And a transformer, without getting too deep into EE, is essentially two pieces of wire wound around each other that aren't making contact. You have a primary and a secondary. The primary wire is connected to one source, and the secondary wire is connected to another. What this does is, as the primary source has current put on it, be it the output of a bass or a guitar or keyboards, that signal is being created across that coil on the primary side, but it's not touching the secondary. But because it's a transformer, a coil, you have a magnetic field that's expanding. It looks remarkably like the incoming incoming current. And so it's induced into the second side. So what this does is it completely decouples the instrument from the PA system or the next source in line.
And, of course, helps to get rid of noise.
Noise, hum, buzz, you name it. Instruments, and I'll try to stay away from the EE. Getting too deep into EE on this, you have an issue called impedance, and basically that is a load. What does the instrument want to be plugged into? Okay. What should that device show the instrument so the instrument can work correctly?
You know, sometimes you do have to listen to the show with your electrical engineering dictionary so that we can keep up with this mastermind over here.
Yeah.
Please continue. That was fantastic.
Nice little diversion there.
That's right.
So, essentially, you want to isolate one instrument from the rest of the PA system. The output from a bass or most keyboards is an unbalanced signal, which means you have a hot conductor and you have a shield. That signal, generally speaking, can only go so far before it picks up noise, buzz, hum, static, whatever else.
Right.
Going into the direct box, the signal from the instrument in question is getting exactly what it wants to see from its output.
Right.
But
okay.
The output of the direct box, the secondary of that coil, is then going to the PA system. So, never the twain shall meet. The output to the PA system is a balance signal.
Right.
XLR mic connector. And that balance signal can go miles.
Miles. Low impedance.
Yes. It can go on and on without picking up noise, buzz, and hum. So, that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is signal conditioning, too. Because mentioned impedance, if the instrument being played is not plugged into the correct device, the sound quality will suffer dramatically. So the direct box should show the instrument being played the correct interface. Acoustic guitars. You have everything out there nowadays from passive, regular guitar-type pickups that are put in acoustics to pickups with preamps in them to microphones and whatever else. A lot of the preamps and the passive pickups all need to be plugged into something with a very high input impedance.
Okay.
The correct direct box will show it that. If you just buy one of the
An adapter
from a certain store that we won't mention.
With the initials RS.
Yeah, that's
RS.
It. Yeah.
Ready Service. Right,
really like Super Parts or something. Anyways, the transformer in them does not show the acoustic instrument high enough load, if you want to call it that.
And we end up with an impedance mismatch.
And it sounds like plinkety-plink, plinkety-plink, plinkety-plink.
You lose everything.
So the first thing with acoustic guitars, get them a direct box, get them a good one.
Right. Absolutely. And these are great tips, and you may already be aware of these, you may not. But it doesn't take much to get online, start looking up direct inboxes and figure out how they work and why we need them, especially for guitars. You also see every once in a while, you see keyboard players using direct inboxes. So it's any type of electronic instrument, but you see them with guitars the most, I think.
Yeah, and you also see a direct box in use between PA systems and between sources. If you have a part of your PA system is plugged into an electrical circuit on one part of the building and the other part is plugged in somewhere else, you can have a potential imbalance, which means a buzz, hum, whatever else. A direct box can be put in line between them to isolate one system from the other. So the only thing going across it
and effectively gets rid of the hum and gets rid of the noise. And we all heard that hum, the 60 hertz hum.
Or 120.
120, that's right. All right, well, let's talk about the drums. I like to keep it simple. One thing, in jazz, how jazz differs from a lot of the other types of music like rock and roll or pop music is in jazz, it's primarily all about the cymbals. Many times we talk about a jazz drummer being a cymbal drummer. Mm-hmm. They're playing on there more than they are the snare, those type of things. But we've determined a long time ago that the more microphones you try to mic every little thing on the drum, it doesn't sound right in the house. It may be great for a studio-type application, mm-hmm. but in the house, it doesn't get the mix. It doesn't get the blend. So we go with a three-microphone type system. We use two overheads, and they're not both at the same level. And we use one on the kick drum, really mm-hmm. low for that. There are particular types of microphones that we use. And I know we use a very large diaphragm mic on the bass drum, and I believe we use condensers on the tops of that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, what we're looking for is, first off, a condenser microphone that can handle large, loud transients. Mm. Any good quality condenser mic should be able to handle that type of sound.
And when you look at these mics, that's good. They talk about the SPL of that, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the things you look at.
And a good condenser should also have a pad built into it, too. Mm. So if you're using them in a drum situation, more than likely you're going to need to pad them. You'll hear a splattiness on the signal. The mixer you may have your mixer set up and you don't see it clipping on the mixer, but it sounds splatty. Put the pad switches on those condensers. But in this case, we're looking for accuracy. So the small diaphragm condensers work wonderfully for overheads. Mm. The Shure SM81 is a standard in that usage. AKG, the 451s are a good choice there. Mm-hmm. In our case, we have access to a set of really good Neumann KM 184s or 84s.
I think they're 84s.
Yeah, KM84s.
I know sometimes we've used the CM1000s.
C1000 AKGs mm-hmm. are a lot less expensive. A lot of high end out of those mics.
Right.
If you have a dead kit, those things will really bring that out. Maybe good, maybe bad.
And at this point, we're not talking all the things we've talked about on this podcast and the other podcast. We have done no equalization on the board whatsoever at this point.
The best equalization is mic placement. Remember that. And in live sound, you may have to compromise. Mm-hmm. In the studio, if the mics are in the right place, you should not need to EQ it. EQ should be viewed more as a crayon, not as a fix.
One of the things I find people on the boards that are, call themselves board operators or sound people that maybe don't really have a lot of theory, they've just been shown things, is that they latch on to this concept of equalization. And they decide that they have to use, if there's three bands of EQ on the board or five bands or parametric sweeps or whatever, everything has to be dialed in.
Oh, yeah.
And it, the first thing I do, no matter what show I'm doing, I go to the board, I turn all the EQs off.
Oh,
I just turn them off because the EQs themselves can be a tool to remove feedback, but they oftentimes create feedback because someone picks it's cranked up to plus 12 on one frequency, and it's going to blow out the house. So when we do all these things, we're checking everything without equalization on, and very rarely for instruments do I actually add equalization at the channel.
Right, and in our case for the live sound version, like for the overheads on the drums, I may pull the bottom out a little bit,
and of course the overheads have high frequency. That's something that the condensers excel at. They're able to pick up those 15,000, 16,000 above hertz. Maybe your sound system might not be able to reproduce them, but that's another good reason for the drum set that you have to that a condenser is used.
A lot of live sound guys, too, over the years, will walk into a situation and they're always going to use a certain mic on a certain place, and they instantly will tweak their EQs on that channel to the same place they always have.
Mm.
No two kick drums sound alike.
No.
No two kit sound. No two instruments. And no two players play them the same
That's
way.
That's right.
So, again, it comes back to placement. The best equalization is placement.
That's good advice. I haven't actually heard you pontificate about that before, but it makes total sense.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And like I said, there will be compromises. You may have a ringing feedback you can't get out of the kit, and you may have to put a little notch here or there on the overheads or something. But you want to play with placement first, and then grab the EQs.
Real quick, why don't we talk a little bit about the piano miking? Now, piano miking, I think, in particular, is one of the hardest things to get right.
Yeah.
And you really need a good set of microphones to do this that can really replicate. Because on the piano, you have so many overtones. You have such highs, such lows with that. It's very rich sound. We use a 9-foot Steinway, which in and of itself is $100,000-some, and it has $100,000-some sound.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, most microphones can't replicate that sound, especially in a live situation. So we mic with two microphones, sometimes three microphones, but I think we've kind of standardized with the two microphones on that. And of course, course, when you mic a piano, you have to make sure that, you know, these things aren't in the way of the player either.
Oh,
so
yeah.
People take these things and put them right in front of the keyboard. But for that, we use sometimes we use the PCCs.
Yes.
Sometimes we use PZMs. Tell us a little bit about those.
If you're talking about a piano used in a live sound setup, accept the fact that it's not going to sound spectacular through the PA. You can make it sound really good.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a jazz trio, you have a few instruments where you can put good mics in a good place on the piano, it'll sound great. The thing is, in a jazz band setup, I don't care if that piano is 300 feet away from the kit.
Mm-hmm.
You are going to get splash in those mics. You're going to get it, and it may or may not be a bad thing. You have to listen to it. But we have to make some compromises. In the studio, the standard studio miking technique on pianos is you get two really good quality condensers, the AKG 414s or 414s, depending on how you refer to it. Those, you get two of those right above the hammers, and then usually they put a stereo mic setup 3, 4, 5 feet back, and that gets a wonderful, gorgeous sound. Can't do that on a live stage.
No.
Now, it's bad enough. Even those AKG mics right over the hammers are still going to pick up splash, bleed, and hopefully not the piano player saying something they shouldn't when they hit a wrong note.
You know what? That's true because, you know, piano players like to hum along. They're like, like guitarists. You know, they're humming along with what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And if the microphone is close to the pianist, you never know.
So our compromise in this situation, and actually if we play around with placement well enough, we get a pretty decent sound. We've been using Crown PCC 160s.
Yes.
Correct model?
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we have two of them, and we leave the lid on the piano in a studio.
We open it up to like the first peg.
Yeah.
It's about maybe 4 inches open.
And if you're in the studio, a lot of times the lid's not on the piano at all, which
right.
makes miking it very easy.
Mm-hmm.
But in our case, we keep the lid on the thing. We put the PCCs. We split the distance on the hammers. If you divide the harp into threes,
mm-hmm.
and you take the one-third and a two-third placement, and then we put on the upper registers, the PCC is on the lid about halfway back on the strings in those registers, and then the same thing with the mic on the bass side, a little further back.
And it's important to know, you may not be familiar with PZM or PCC microphones. These are flat microphones. They look like a metal plate.
Yeah.
And whatever you put them on, that surface actually becomes part of that microphone a little bit. And these can actually just be can be taped or they can be placed into position.
Yeah, and they work very well in that context. Again, we talked about the best EQ is placement. In a piano, you have two things tonally you're looking for. You need the transient. You need the hammer hitting the string.
Yes.
You need the transient on the front end, but you also want some of the resonance from the harp. So in a live sound setting like that, if our mics are too far back, the sound loses a lot of the definition. Plus, the further those mics go back on the strings, the more bleed gets in.
That's right.
So we have to find a nice compromise between where the mics or where the hammers aren't too plinky, or where the thing is just too dull.
And you know, we're fortunate. We're using a grand piano. Many people don't have access to grand pianos. They have access to upright pianos.
And those things are a bugger.
They are. Well, number one, upright pianos, you know, even if they're made by Steinway, don't have the resonating sound. The sounding boards aren't large enough that you get this brilliant sound. But they can still sound good. But one thing people don't realize with the upright is you have to actually open that thing up and get in there to mic those strings.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people just take the microphone and put it to the soundboard in the back, and at that point you're really losing a lot of the harmonics in the higher end, the higher end overtones with that. If you don't open your piano up and get the microphones in to the strings, that would become a problem for miking, especially if you're trying to replicate a good sound.
Mm-hmm. An upright piano has a sound.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in the studio sense, you never rule anything out. John Lennon, imagine his upright piano just sold at Christie's last year. I can't remember. I think it's white, but it sold for some insane amount of money. But it has a sound.
Mm-hmm.
It may be good. It may be bad. An upright piano in a setting of a jazz band, forget it. There's no place that you're going to be able to put a mic where you're not going to pick up everything else in the room.
In a venue where you're trying to use sound reinforcement. Now, of course, jazz clubs across the world have upright pianos, but you're talking about a little tiny room.
Right.
You know, you're talking about maybe using it with a trio. Looks like we're running out of time again. Mm-hmm. Real quick, let's just finish this up and talk about our vocal microphone. Very simple, straightforward. We use a wireless microphone. And the reason we use a wireless microphone for that is because our vocalists like to roam around.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they like to they like to engage the audience. They like to have freedom. It's not like Bob Barker. He's got his big wire still to this day going all the way through the back. And there's a whole technique to mastering the wire when you walk around like that. Our kids would trip over them. Our young ladies, our young women, our young men would just fall right over themselves and right off the stage. So we go with a wireless. microphone, and right now we're using the Shure microphone series.
Correct. Now, in our case, usually a vocal microphone on a stage, if you're talking rock and roll bands, generally speaking, you'll see a dynamic mic, mm-hmm. some form of like an SM58, or there's a whole class, there's a Sennheiser with 865, mm-hmm. things like that. Again, they have a real tight pattern. You can't really break them. You can hammer nails. But there is a class of handheld vocal microphones that are condensers. The Shure SM87s, mm-hmm. The Beta 87s are a condenser, but they're handheld. They're designed to be worked close mm-hmm. and loud, and they have a little tighter pattern to them.
Right.
In our case, for the vocalist, we are using a straight cardioid pattern mic that is a condenser. So it picks up, it's a little more forgiving
sure.
in placement. You know, we wouldn't be able to get 130 dB out of the PA system with it because of that sensitivity, but
right.
it sounds pretty good for the vocalist, mm-hmm. gives them some room to move around, but it also has that the blast filter built into
yes.
the windscreen.
Absolutely.
And they're relatively bulletproof. The AKG 535s are another spectacular condenser handheld mic. But in our case, and the kids, too, don't have mic techniques
right.
yet. They made the basics.
Something we develop, right.
So we need something forgiving. So we
right.
give up a little level in the PA system mm-hmm. to give them a microphone that will sound better and give them
the flexibility to move around.
Right. And they sound pretty good, too.
I think they sound fantastic, that particular series. We have a Shure UC series.
Yeah, we're using, for our wireless, we're using the UCs, which have been discontinued. UHFRs are the new ones.
Okay.
But we're using the mic heads on them are Beta 87Cs.
Okay. All right. Well, this was fantastic stuff. Hopefully you learned something. As Darren and I go back and forth, we learn things even by our own podcast. It gives us time to think things through. So maybe we'll continue a little bit about this next time. We'll talk about mixers and monitors and speakers in the house system. But that's for another podcast. For now, I'm Joe Pizzano.
I'm Darren Morton.
And we'll catch you next time.